Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Uprising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than just defend positions. Okay, a gay Marxist Spanish teacher and a conservative Mormon mindfulness practitioner walk into a bar. And that's not a joke. That's not a joke. In spite of their seemingly opposite backgrounds, Arthur Pena and Jacob Hess have not only become friends, but also collaborators. And they've done so by boldly speaking their truths with and listening to one another. At a time when people are deplatformed and canceled for speaking their truth, and political correctness is proving itself to be politically incorrect, how do we use our differences in a dynamic and transformational way? Arthur and Jacob are the co-authors, along with Randall Charles Paul, of an upcoming book, Inevitable Influencers: Why Deep Down We All Want and Need to Persuade Each Other of What We See as Good, Beautiful, and True. Wow, what a title. With a title that long, who needs a book? But we'll hear more about it. Truth, beauty, and goodness, as Plato stated and Rudolf Steiner reiterated, are the manifest expressions of love. And while love may be universal, love's expressions are diverse. And while there's a part of us who want to pretend that these differences can be glossed over, in doing so, we miss out on the power of genuine engagement. Here's a quote from their book introduction. Quote, "Without authentic conversation across our differences, with a genuine, albeit sometimes wary, openness to mutual persuasion, we fear we'll be missing something very profound and precious. That's why we argue here for the importance, for the virtual necessity even, of, quote, collaborative contestation among rivals, unquote, as we sometimes like to call it." Arthur Pena is a semi-retired teacher of Spanish and English as a second language. He has an MA in linguistics from the University of Iowa and a certificate in conflict resolution from Sonoma State University. He specializes in dialogue between liberals and conservatives, and Arthur is a member of the National Coalition of Dialogue and Liberation. He's organized and facilitated public discussion forums on controversial political issues, as well as a number of ongoing local living room conversations. Jacob Hess is a mindfulness teacher and writer focused on exploring long-term sustainable healing from depression. He's on the board of the National Coalition of Dialogue and Deliberation and co-author of, I love this title, "You're Not as Crazy as I Thought, but You're Still Wrong," unquote. And he has a passion for preserving space for people to disagree sharply while still loving and respecting each other. He's got a PhD in clinical communicable psychology from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Welcome, Arthur, and welcome, Jacob.
Hi, Steve.
Good to have you here. Okay, let's start at the beginning. And again, one of you will start, and the other one will chime in. So that's how it's going to work. Let's start at the beginning. How did the two of you connect and begin working together?
Go ahead, Jacob.
Take it.
I honestly don't remember, so go ahead.
Let's start at the very beginning. So I sent an email to the National Coalition of Dialogue and Deliberation listserv inquiring about who might be interested having a ideologically diverse conversation about sexuality. This was during the height of the gay marriage debates in our country. And we gathered an evangelical woman, a lesbian activist, a Marxist atheist professor, Arthur, and myself, and a Latter-day Saint. We're trying to get away from that label of Mormon, which was applied to my people by their enemies that drove us out of the United States years ago. So we were quite a diverse group, and we just started talking, building relationships and trust and connection. And as many people find who do this kind of work, the longer you stay at it, kind of like marriage, the deeper your intimacy and ability goes, to the point that you're no longer on eggshells, sort of like trying to make sure that you're not hurting feelings. You're starting to get into a place where you can press and really challenge. And that really introduces this. It's kind of how we came to this book. Arthur and I would want to add, we're working with Charles Randall Paul on this book. He's a philosopher and a remarkable mind, works with the Center for Interreligious Diplomacy, and didn't want to overload you with having all three of us on. So, Arthur?
Well, I'm thinking our connection might have gone back a little further. I believe when you and Phil Neiser were working on your book, You're Not As Crazy As I Thought, But You're Still Wrong, which, again, that title is just perfect. It kind of sums up so much of what we're doing, I think. And I think I may have heard you online and then just tried to contact you. I'm not sure if that was our first connection.
There you go. We even disagree about our origin. Just perfect.
We do.
And by the way, thank you for correcting me around the M word. Again, these are things that we need to say very clearly. Oh, by the way, that's a term that's was used pejoratively, you know, and so on. And, you know, I stand corrected. There's no no charge and no energy about that. Anything else you want to share about the origins, Arthur?
And I think
there
was a connection.
First conversation? How was the first conversation for you? I mean, in doing that, in agreeing to be part of that conversation, what was that like?
Who were you asking?
I'll ask Arthur first.
Which conversation? The one about the book, the You're Not As Crazy As I Thought, or the?
Oh, the one about the forum involving at the time of the gay marriage discussion.
Right. Well, it was challenging, as might be expected, and also just very animating. I mean, it's just like such a wonderful thing. It's like almost something I'm thirsting for, really, to have these kind of deep conversations with people who are very unlike me, but equally dedicated to getting past the sort of surface politeness and digging deeper. So it was quite quite wonderful.
How was that for you? Yeah, go ahead. How was that for you?
I'm sorry, I was going to riff off of him. So there was a moment that I would put my finger on as especially central to this book eventually starting, where we had gathered for an in-person conversation. I think it was connected to an NCDD conference. And Arthur and I walked around a lake, and I said something, and I'd say maybe the content matters less than what actually happened. But I was sharing something about my perspective on sexuality from a Latter-day Saint perspective, and Arthur said, "That's a lie." He said, "It's like that's not true. That's really not true." And you know, when someone says something like that to you, we all know what to do. You get defensive, you push back, and you're just like, "Well, they're clearly being unreasonable. They're being mean. They're being cruel," and we go into our defenses. But we had talked enough that it was this magical moment where we were able to do something different and like hold space for the serious pushback Arthur had brought to something that I honestly believed. And in making space for it, I realized he was right, at least partly. Like there's a part of his pushback that I really needed to hear. And that started getting me excited. My experience with Arthur, more than anyone else I have been in dialogue with, got me excited at this idea of doing more than just dialogue, which is great. Dialogue meaning I'm going to understand you, you're going to understand me, and we're going to try to respect each other's views. That's great. But what Arthur did in that moment was not just dialogue. He tried to persuade me. He tried to push me. He was challenging me. And to actually experience the challenge as not just a threat, but as like this kind of opportunity to see a little bit more and to be a little bit more honest with words that I had assumed were right. But out of that ferment of our back and forth, I came away seeing a little bit more of the full truth and the whole truth, as Arthur likes to talk about. So that was the moment, I would say, that originated this book project that we're now working on.
Yeah, I think
Go ahead.
I think that is what makes it work for both of us in terms of persuasion, is that we're both seeking the truth. We might be, you know, momentarily trying to persuade each other that our opinion about what the truth is the correct one, but our deeper desire is for the actual truth itself, which may or may not coincide with our opinions about it. So I think that drives us both in this direction.
Now, you use the words authentic conversations. Is that what you mean by authentic conversations? And have you been able to cultivate these conversations in other people?
With difficulty, I'd say. I come from, you know, I'm sort of a libertarian-leaning Marxist is how I identify politically, and so I guess I'm in the left world to some degree. At least people would categorize me that way, but I tend to find it harder to go in the direction of persuasive conversations with people on the left rather than people on the right. And I'm not completely sure why that is, but Jacob, maybe you could jump in there.
I think they're both hard right now. It kind of depends on where they are on the left and the right. There's a kind of mentality on the right and on the left that is just not interested in this, increasingly so. So I'd say, like, I just got off the phone with Joan Blades, and I've heard this mm-hmm. with Living Room Conversations, and I've heard this from Liz Joyner with Village Square. The willingness to participate in a conversation like this has declined measurably, like significantly among the masses. And there is a group who is, to use Arthur's word, thirsting after it more. Like there's kind of a new hunger that's emerged in the same moment that so many people are sort of like done. Like, okay, clearly talking to those people is a waste of time. You know, a lot of people are just coming to that conclusion. And in the same moment, others are saying, we've got to do this. And so, like, it's interesting to see both of these things happening at the same time.
How do you think this particular crisis that we're in right now has impacted either the desire to engage more across the lines or to hunker in the bunker with your own kind?
This experience around us right now, like the pandemic, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's increasing both. I think there are some people who are really realizing that we really need to kind of grapple with what's actually happening. You know, what is the truth about the pandemic? And then there are people who already think they have the truth and yet don't want to really engage in the kind of conversations that might help them persuade the other side to realize that they maybe are right. And even less so, are they willing to consider the possibility that they may be wrong, actually? And I'm sort of just completely baffled myself. I spend so much time in these different worlds that I end up really not knowing what the truth is, and yet knowing how important it is to know what the truth is. And so I kind of want more people to be as desperate as I am, I guess, for that whole truth, to realize, or at least to have that same desire for it.
I agree.
I want people to be as confused and as baffled as I am.
What was that? What was that, Jacob?
The only problem with Arthur's argument just there is when I serve up the truth on a platter right in front of him, he's so enthralled with being in a conflicted place that he doesn't want it. Like, I haven't been able to persuade him away from that love of confusion. I'm teasing you, Arthur. So
I know I'm still not a Latter-day Saint somehow. I don't know how that's happened.
And I'm not a Marxist. Almost thou persuadest me to be a Marxist. So I would agree with Arthur and say, like, whenever you're in your fight or flight place, that's like the least creative, open, you know, like, on a physiological level, our bodies are just in survival mode. And obviously, for obvious reasons, many people are there right now. And in the same moment, as Arthur and I have both said, there's a way in which crisis can push all of us to a kind of an edge. Arthur uses that word edge a lot, an edge that's really good and healthy, you know, like where you're like, I don't want to live this way anymore. Like, why am I doing this? Or like, this is making me miserable. And so kind of considering things we hadn't considered before. And again, it's fascinating to see both of them happen at the same time. I keep wanting to quote Charles Dickens, sort of like the best of times, the worst of times, like the most open of times and the most closed of times. The most fearful of times and the most hopeful of times. It just feels like those contrasts are so vivid right now.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to be back with this conversation with Arthur and Jacob, Steve Behrman on WikiPolitiki, back after these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with our guests, Jacob Hess and Arthur Pena, and we're talking about authentic conversations. And another word that I think you would like to talk more about, that word is persuasion. We don't like being persuaded generally. We don't like people calling us on the phone trying to sell us products to persuade us to do things. How do we redefine and engage in persuasion with integrity and authenticity?
Go ahead, Jacob.
Oh, what a great question. No, this is like central to everything, because Arthur just commented in an email earlier today that two different organizations that we really respect tell people as a way to get them to come to their conversations, oh, by the way, this is not about persuading anyone. This is not what, don't worry. Nobody's going to try to persuade you. You're not going to have to. And it is interesting to me that the word has become kind of a dirty word. Like it's something we associate with marketing, perhaps, politics for sure, and religious proselyting, and it's sort of like, on a psychological level, like we're so inundated with just constant, a barrage of people trying to persuade us to buy something or vote for someone or hear a message that we just shut off. Just like think about our email accounts. Like you get barraged so much, and who reads all their email anymore? No one. It's like, just stop. We just don't pay attention to it. That's the metaphor for me for how persuasion has become this kind of dirty word. And we're trying to not just rehabilitate, but reimagine persuasion as a social good. Arthur, maybe you could talk about the sweetness, what you taught me about the ancient definition of persuasion.
Yeah, the sense of, apparently the Sanskrit word, the root word swadya or swad, something like that, is sweet. And that's where persuasion comes to make the truth seem sweet to the other person so they're attracted to it, possibly. And on a personal level, I mean, I've been accused to my face and actually told not to try to persuade people in a couple different discussion groups that I'm in. And I always find it shocking because, in fact, yesterday on a Skype call with a friend of mine, an international friend of mine, she said something like, but don't I have the right to believe what I want to believe? And I was just stunned for a moment because it was so out of the orbit for me, where I'm trying to just figure out what the truth is. And yet she felt as if I were somehow thinking that she didn't have the right to believe what she believed. And somehow people are stuck in that mindset that everyone has the right to believe what they believe. But if we're on the Titanic and heading towards the iceberg, and one person believes we should go to the left and the other person believes we should go to the right, well, we may just end up hitting the iceberg. So I think the important thing is the truth. Is there an iceberg out there? Are we heading in that direction? And let's really try to help each other figure out what the whole truth is of our situation.
Jacob?
Oh, precisely what Arthur said. I love the iceberg metaphor because, maybe to put it in personal terms, if I'm not seeing something that is important, that is beautiful, that is true, then I want Arthur to help me see it. That is, if he cares about me. Like, if he really cares about me as a human being, then I would expect him to come and say, hey, you're not seeing this yet, but I want you to, because I love you, you know? That's not how we think about it. It's like, if you're saying anything that suggests my truth is not perfect or the full truth or wonderful, you know, like, how dare you suggest, Arthur, that my truth is not all I need? And how dare you suggest that I can't figure this out on my own? And how dare you? So, like, there's this, it starts to feel a little childish. Like, really? No. I don't have the full truth. So heavens, help me see a little bit beyond what I can see, at least if you care about me. So that's kind of the what we're exploring. And what we found, by the way, is layer after layer of mental barriers that exist in trying this. And so a lot of what we're writing about are just addressing some of the cultural barriers exist for all of us to engage in a practice of mutual influence, as Randy likes to call it, and Randall Paul, or truth seeking together is a phrase that Arthur loves. You know, like, how do we do this and stay vulnerable to being wrong and having somebody that cares about us point it out and say, hey, consider this.
Yeah, and let me give you one example of something that maybe can, one of these barriers, they're almost like social habits. And one of these are something we've sometimes called the tyranny of civility, that assumes that the person sharing a concern or a perspective or an opinion has to say it in a certain kind of tone of voice, like, quote unquote, respectfully. And that is one of the, in my opinion, one of the biggest barriers, because some of the issues we're facing are life and death and very personal, like in the gay marriage, for example, versus the religious conservative views. I mean, people's lives are on the line here, and it seems, and yet if someone gets angry or, you know, quote unquote, tries to persuade the other person or says that's a lie, things like that, all of a sudden their point of view is somehow discounted, or they're not playing by the rules, and they just don't get heard after that. And sometimes in our work together with Jacob and I sometimes think of myself as the bad cop and he's the good cop. And he gave an example of that earlier when talking about love. And I don't tend to talk about love that much. I just talk about truth. So truth and love are probably two sides of this that are important to keep together. But to some degree, you know, the idea that I have to love my enemy is I'm also a Christian as well as a Marxist. So I do kind of – I'm sort of stuck with that commandment. But it sure is hard. And I don't think in terms of our politics and our nation – you know, we are a democracy of sorts, and we have to actually make decisions together. So, you know, the truth must matter. You know, is climate change a hoax or is it not? Is, you know, is this pandemic real, or is it, you know, was it the American military who started it? Was the Chinese? I mean, all these ideas are floating around, and yet people are not sitting down and saying, okay, well, I think, you know, it's a hoax and you think it's true. And so now let's try to, what's the next step? You know, now we understand each other, but what's past that? We can understand each other and empathize with each other's positions, but that is so far short of what we really need. We actually need to know how the world works and who's in charge and who's not in charge and what's actually happening. I think some people would disagree with that. Some people think, you know, all is good and everything is perfect, and then that's also a different worldview that I would disagree with. but the next step in the conversation is always to get past mere mutual understanding and to go on past that into the question of what is the truth. But unfortunately, even the word truth is like a trigger word, especially for people on the left, I found. If I mention the word truth, then they'll start saying, well, you know, there's really no such thing, or it's everyone's opinion. And that's another example of these sort of social mind. I think of them as like mines in a minefield that you just trigger by stepping on them. You mention the word truth, and all of a sudden, the conversation gets derailed.
You know, I think that really what we're talking about is people emerging from their paradigms. Really, my joke about it is conservatives come out of your foxholes. Progressives come out of your NPR holes. Because, again, we're in the trenches because of the particular information that we get fed that reinforces what we already believe. And I think, as somebody suggested earlier, I think it was you, Jacob, at a time when people are in fear, and there's, you know, it's understandable, we can't go out, they're not telling us anything, there's this pandemic, we may get sick, blah, blah, blah. There's that tendency to find comfort, you know, snuggle up with a warm, with a cozy dogma on a dark night of the soul, and have something that, a belief that you can take refuge in. And time for us to actually, I'm thinking as well, come up with some common truth together, which I know the progressives like to think that facts are the truth, but I think that the truth is much bigger than that. And there's context and all of that stuff. So I think anything that brings us into conversations where we're actually looking out together at something out there from our specific perspectives, I think that could be generative. So that's the next question.
Yes.
Now that, what's the next step? What is the next step?
Well, let's talk about that a teeny bit. In fairness, there's nothing wrong with seeking comfort, and we all have certain ideas and beliefs that bring comfort. And I tend to think there's also a kind of pathologization of conviction that happens sometimes, where, if you're clinging to something or if you believe something too strongly, and this false idea that healthy conversation is about letting go of any attachments to ideas and just sort of being willing to, that's not a life I want. There are certain ideas that I do hold on to as precious. And as Arthur has taught me, this is something I've taken from him especially, that there is a threat to this kind of conversation that is real. It's not manufactured. It's not just subjective. It's a threat of actually learning something that could unsettle your own precious foundation. And whether you're talking about a hardcore religious person or an activist in one of many causes, that is unsettling. So there are both bad reasons and good reasons that people don't want to do this. You know, like, yeah, if you don't want to potentially learn something that might unsettle or shake your foundations or like expand your vista to the point that you make life changes or you feel like you have to make life changes, then don't do this. Just stay in your foxholes or your NPR holes. So I don't want this to be a condemnation of that, is what I'm saying. I want it to also be like an acknowledgement that human beings do need that comfort. And what we're proposing is not no-brainer. Like, duh, why don't you just do this? It's better. Well, it's scary. It's been scary for us, and we've been in the practice, but we have found so much value in it that we want to make sure it doesn't get covered up and that we don't all start to assume that if you're trying to persuade someone, you're doing something bad and you're just arrogant and you're just being judgmental and not accepting people's journeys and whatever. So that's the work we're trying to do, is kind of clear away the path. It's like a path in the mountain that's been overgrown, and we're trying to hack away the branches and say, hey, yeah, it takes some work, but the view at the top is really amazing.
I think, too, that
I want to hear what you have to say.
That one thing we also do try to get across is that I think we believe that we're all little missionaries anyway, so we are all, we can't help it. You know, we will be trying to persuade other people. And if we pretend that we're not, then it comes out in very destructive ways, very, very passive aggressive ways or very condescending ways. And so I guess one thing we're trying to do is just to have a more forthright conversation that, okay, you know, let's take the gloves off. You know, we're in a battle here, an ideological battle. Let's just at least admit that, recognize it. And there's a lot at stake here. And let's not do this indirectly. Let's do this a little more directly. And I think that's the actual deepest kind of respect. There's one term I really love from Hyland's book, Martian, what is that called? Stranger in a Strange Land, the word grok, grokking. And there's one passage in there that the Martians, grokking is like a deep, empathic, complete understanding of what the other person says or is and feels in a way. But at one point, apparently, according to the story, the Martians grokked the people from the fourth planet and realized, I think, that they were actually irreconcilable enemies. So they decided to destroy them. And you know, this is my bad cop side coming into my edge side. And I don't necessarily see peace as always, I don't think peace is always, a possibility. I think it should, I think we all want it first, but sometimes you have to fight. And, but at the very least, let's fight on the basis of reality and truth. We don't want to be fighting on the basis of lies. Like, I think those people think this, and therefore we have to get them. And it turns out, well, they don't really think that at all. I mean, how tragic would that be to go to war? Imagine that, going to war on the basis of lies. Like, that's never happened before, right? So we need to. and yet it's not always peace. It's not kumbaya.
Yeah. It seems like what this really is authentic speaking and authentic engagement, so that you're allowed to express the full expanse of who you are, and sometimes in the process of I know this has happened to me. There's an old saying: how do I know what I think until I hear what I say? And sometimes when you actually end up listening to yourself, you go, well, do I really believe that? Or is that, I used to believe that. Maybe I don't anymore. Maybe that's something that is not as ironclad as I imagined. Or then you might go, wow, this is something that is fundamental to my purpose in life. And, you end up going, well, that person may be an enemy of mine. You know, that's a hard thing when you're friends. We're going to take another break, and then we'll be back with a final section with our friends Jacob Hess and Arthur Pena talking about authentic conversation.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, we're back with our guests, Jacob Hess and Arthur Pena, talking about engaging across lines that could have been battle lines. I'm remembering back maybe 8 or 10 years ago, our mutual mentor and collaborator, Joseph McCormick, who is one of the pioneers in transpartisan engagement, had this transpartisan group that he put together in Seattle, and it was very diverse. And Trudy and I, my wife Trudy and I, went to one of their meetings, and I have to say it was messy. It was very messy. And yet, through all of this, you know, people being huffy and puffy and standing up for themselves and speaking their truth and sometimes raising their voices, out of that came an amazing sharing where the group actually – people learned from one another. The two sides actually had – each of them had pieces of the puzzle that they were able to share together, and it only came out after everything was said, after they were able to fully speak their truths, and then from the silence that was there afterward, this other thing emerged. Now, is that something that you see as possible? Is that the purpose of your book? And what is the purpose of your book? What do you hope to accomplish with this book?
Well, sometimes, Steve, I think you do a better job of talking about this than we do. So go ahead, Jacob.
Well, yeah, I'm going to try to answer that question by shining the light on something Arthur said earlier, if I could. Just feels like it needs to be said. The inclination both Arthur and I have experienced a lot in sharing from our very different perspectives, Eileen, you know, like we disagree on all sorts of things, is we'll share something in the hope of, you know, edifying or putting something out there. And people, maybe especially online, but also in person, are very quick to just say, you're being mean. Stop being mean. You're not being nice enough. Like, and then the conversation is over. And so the tyranny of civility that Arthur speaks of is real. It's this sort of interesting thing of, I guess you could call it a fragility, like Jonathan Haidt describes, where if you cross that line to dare suggest that someone's not seeing the full truth, there's a really easy out. It's just saying, stop being mean. I mean, I've written a lot and Arthur's written a lot, and you wouldn't believe how many people respond to efforts to articulate something. So we've done our best to make an argument, and the response is, too bad that person just doesn't have enough empathy or compassion or love. So one way to describe what we're trying to do in this book is to make sure we don't go crazy with that kind of a response. Like, we're trying to articulate how and why we think we can do better than that. And what world would allow us to do that more? So what we say in the introduction, this might be helpful, is imagine living in a world where no one felt like they could share what they considered to be good, beautiful, or true with someone else. Like, would you enjoy that? Is that the world you want to live in? And it's interesting when you pose that question, because some people are like, yeah, but bug off, get away from me, get out of my business. And Arthur and I are like, standing on the top of the building screaming, no. And Randy with us, you know, like, we're losing something if we stop doing that. You know, we're losing the possibility of grasping a higher truth. And who fills the vacuum if we stop doing that? What loud voices, what powerful, wealthy voices fill the vacuum and tell us all what the truth is, right? So there's
Maybe nobody fills the vacuum, and we just end up like, sometimes I think like the universe, the way it's expanding and the stars are, you know, these little points of light are just getting farther and farther and farther apart. Well, that's where we're heading. If we're not sharing our light within, or what we think is the light within, we'll just keep going farther and farther apart and just die in this endless cold blackness. How's that for you know, optimistic? Think,
yeah, no, let's go for that. So I think really what you're saying is that the end of engagement of opposing ideas is the end of learning. You can't learn something you already are convinced that you already know. And while nobody likes to be wrong in the short term, in the long term, it's easy to see the benefits of being wrong. I've been wrong about a number of things, and I laugh at how the universe was able to open my mind and open my heart to something that I was totally closed to before. And that's made my life richer.
I think most people would readily, almost too readily agree with that, though. We always need to learn. And maybe if we gave an example of like what one of the divides that Jacob and I struggle over with is the, he's a conservative Latter-day Saint, and I happen to be a gay man. I'm not particularly liberal or conservative. I kind of have agnostic views of whether, you know, what is the nature of homosexuality and whether it's good or bad and all that kind of things. But this debate over who's the more loving side is so tragic because, people on the Latter-day Saints side, if they truly believe that, homosexuality is, deeply detrimental to a person's spiritual growth, then to speak that out loud is the loving thing. And then people on the gay activist side, if they think that the Latter-day Saint teachings are harmful and hurtful, then that's the loving thing. And that's why, at least in my opinion, the only possible sort of framework for going forward here is to recognize that, or ask the question, so what is true here? And if these both sides believe, I'm getting a little lost here, Jacob, so maybe you could jump in there.
Well, this brings up something that I probably have learned the most from you about. Arthur, because he has lived right in this middle of the divide, he sometimes says that the lines of the culture war run through his very soul. He can like grok, he can stand in the shoes of both sides and get why they would believe what they believe. And there is an incredible vulnerability there that again is understandably threatening. But if you enter a space where you're open to being wrong and seeing something new, it's like exhilarating. It's like, I want to use the word arousing. It has this dopamine spike that's kind of like intriguing. Like you're, so if I could use this metaphor as a final word for me, Steve, I teach meditation and it takes a lot of work to get someone to the point that they're willing to sit in silence with their own body and mind. Why? Because it is not easy. It's terrifying. That's why we keep the noise on all day and we don't want to think about what's going on inside. This is very similar to that. In fact, I think it's a kind of mindful practice to sit with someone else that doesn't just affirm you, doesn't just think all of your ideas are wonderful and true and beautiful and right. In fact, might actually think your ideas are a little nutty or dangerous. Sit with openness to hearing, to hearing questions. And I want to call it a kind of mindful practice that takes work to become willing. But just like meditation, if you're willing to kind of get into that space, the fruits of the practice on an emotional level, on a spiritual level, on a relationship level, are so immense. And so like I'm convinced this is the kind of the, for all those that practice meditation, this is your next level. sit with somebody that drives you nuts, that is going to question you, that's not just going to be one of your buddies and say, everything you say and do is amazing and true and perfect. I mean, that's good too. You want to have those kind of people in your life. But you got to find someone like Arthur that's going to say, that's a lie. That's not true. Otherwise, what are you missing out on?
Right. Yeah. Just to be clear, though, at least I wouldn't be advocating a mindful tone, or it's a, you know, we need the emotion there. These things are just too too deep and too threatening to people. And Jacob and I have gone back and forth on the fact that his religion is a mortal enemy of my sexuality. And my sexuality, if affirmed, that is, if affirmed by a gay activist point of view, for example, if it's affirmed, it's an actual mortal enemy to his faith. And I actually think that both cannot survive, cannot coexist peacefully forever. And there will be winners and losers here. And yet, even so, Jacob and I really love each other, and we want to sort of create this third way. What did you call it? You call it, Jacob, the third space or something?
A third space, yeah.
Go ahead.
But as Arthur's suggesting, it's a space where we can fight too, and grapple and contest. But it's with a view of truth. It's not
right.
Just a demonizing kind of fight. It's a different kind of fight where we say, let's at least fight fair. Let's agree to represent the perspectives of the other side in a way that is fair. And so Arthur hinted at this, but when somebody says, are you loving or not? Are you compassionate or not? This is one of the things that came out of our earlier conversation. That doesn't represent a reality that we can actually disagree on what love is and what identity is. And even so, in the end, it might end up being a contestation where not everybody ends up winning the day, and there are consequences. And these are many things that you've taught me, Arthur. I don't know why I'm saying these. You should be talking. This is fun, Steve. Thank you.
Well, you know, one of the things that occurs to me, of course, I have my perspective on this as well. And when I look at what's been going on campus for the past number of years, where people have to be protected, you can't speak certain things, you can't say your truth. I did a presentation on the campus 2 years ago, and the most vital student in the group, the one that was the most active and the most interested, she said, I can't express my feelings here. I don't feel like I am allowed to say what I really think. And I imagine that she was a conservative and probably religious, and she felt that her opinion was not wanted and that she would be shut down, she would be shunned. And so on. And I think in part of people trying to protect other people who they imagine are too fragile to protect themselves, that is the white liberal disease of protecting people from certain kinds of speech rather than having those people articulate, as you did right away, Jacob. By the way, we don't use that term because it's a pejorative term and blah, blah, blah. And I go, oh, okay, cool. Thank you for the information. And that's really how people actually genuinely can change their minds without resistance. So I think that you talk about co-resisting. So in the last few minutes, what do you mean by co-resisting? Is that what we've been talking about?
I think that was Randall's term, and that probably Jacob understands it better than I do.
Boy, this is where we miss our friend Randy. But there is a sense of welcoming the grappling rather than trying to make it go away. You know, when we feel something uncomfortable, our tendency is to want to like force it into the cellar, like get it away from me. This is saying, no. This is here, and this is how it is. Whether in a marriage, you know, all that research on good marriages, they have disagreements they just live with. So what if we made space for it and worked with it and learned from it and allowed it to be a kind of an engine for us rather than only a source of pain? I mean, Randy would do a better job, and we can share some links to some of this, you know, our book on a third space that Arthur and I wrote. We'll make sure you get links to them.
It occurs to me that one thing we may not have made clear yet too is we see ourselves, I think, as taking the next step past where most dialogue groups go. But we think the work that most dialogue groups are doing is still probably, or at least possibly, still the most important work to do. Just, you know, to at least find a way to have people in the same room, you know, empathizing with each other to some degree, is still probably the main work that has to be done. We're just seeing the need for one step further. Is that right, Jacob?
Yep. Beautiful.
Well, you know, it certainly seems that what you're doing, because it's face-to-face, even though right now it's voice-to-voice and sometimes via Skype, so much of what happens via the social media, it's kind of like grenades are lobbed over a wall at a straw man on the other side. And the
yes.
people, you know, I mean, basically that's yeah. really what it is. The people that we're fighting don't really exist. They're just simply
exactly.
straw men. And so yeah. what you're doing is you're making it real.
Yeah.
And you're giving people credit enough to be able to stand there while somebody disagrees with them. And this has been a real missing piece that has really, I think, really been very detrimental to our growth together and to turning the dueling dualities into dynamic duo dance partners. So thank you for being our dance partners today. If I was a very bad boy, I'd say we have a Latter-day Saint and a Latter-day Sinner, but I'm not going to say that, okay? I appreciate you both very much. Thank you, Jacob Hess, and thank you, Arthur Pena, for joining us on WikiPolitiki. This is Steve Behrman, and we'll catch you again next week.